This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening and welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington, and coming up this hour on Africa News Tonight.
Tensions have escalated in Uganda's capital after a court appearance for opposition leader Kizza Besigye was cancelled and two opposition leaders were arrested. Besigye is charged with treason after calling February's presidential poll rigged and declaring himself president.
That's Elizabeth Pallah reporting from Kampala. We'll have full details on this story coming up. Also, Somali officials say the organizer of last year's massacre at Garissa University College in Kenya is dead. A European Union naval operation destroys more than 100 boats used by people smugglers in its first year of operation. And Zimbabwe is experiencing its deepest financial crisis since 2008. We'll have these stories and more, so stay with us. There's lots more ahead on Africa News Tonight. Our top story this hour, tensions have escalated in Uganda's capital after a court appearance for opposition leader Kizza Besigye was cancelled and two opposition leaders were arrested. Besigye is charged with treason after calling February's presidential poll rigged and declaring himself president. Elizabeth Pallah has more from Kampala.
When it became clear that Besigye wouldn't attend Wednesday's hearing, the packed courtroom erupted in anger. The government cited security concerns for Besigye's absence, saying they couldn't risk bringing him to court. Although the chief magistrate called for calm, Besigye's supporters continued to demonstrate, eventually shutting down the session. They remained in the courtroom demonstrating their dissatisfaction by holding prayers and singing that one day President Yoweri Museveni would die and they would be free. The demonstration remained calm with no police intervention. One activist with Besigye's FDC party, John Mugabe, says they just wanted to be heard.
We are not here to cause disruption because as Ugandans, we are here also to defend our vote, which was rigged. However much the police and the state is trying to push us to that side to cause violence, but we know that Museveni, we know, is good in violence, and we are going to demonstrate in free and fair way according to the Constitution. But violence is not our weapon to use at this time.
After leaving the courtroom, a group of activists marched to the main road. Police called for them to disperse, asking them to stop singing and chanting. When they continued, two FDC members, Ingrid Turinawe and Doreen Nyanjura, were arrested. Member of Parliament, Betty Nambuze, who was in the courtroom to support Besigye, says she has concerns about the future.
It's so sad that as a country we are heading for a situation where the law of the jungle, going by might and not right, it's quite very bad that we are heading for such a very bad period. But at the moment, some of us have nothing to do apart from keep guessing what the next move President Museveni will be taking.
The opposition is calling for an independent audit of the February presidential election, which President Museveni officially won with 60% of the vote. Besigye's next court appearance is scheduled for mid-June. Elizabeth Pallah for VOA News, Kampala.
Somali officials say the organizer of last year's massacre at Garissa University College in Kenya was killed in a late-night military operation. Mohamed Mahamud, better known as Dulyadin, led al-Shabaab's Amniyat unit. The April 2015 attack on the college left 148 people dead, nearly all of them students. A senior Somali official speaking on condition of anonymity says U.S. helicopters fired missiles hitting the car in which Dulyadin and two others were traveling. However, a security minister in the Juba region told the VOA Somali service that the militant was killed by a U.S.-trained Somali commando unit. The attack took place about 30 kilometers north of Kismayo. In Kenya, there may be a compromise in store on electoral reform. Several protests by the opposition turned violent in the past month. However, at a rally in Nairobi today, opposition leader Raila Odinga said plans are in the works for dialogue. Lenny Rubaga has more from Nairobi.
Kenya's opposition parties held a demonstration in Nairobi Wednesday to mark Freedom Day. Addressing thousands of supporters, Raila Odinga, the leader of Kenya's main opposition coalition, CORD, said the opposition and the government have agreed to each name five parliamentarians by Friday to hold talks on electoral reform. Odinga said the opposition's demands remain the same and that the nine members of the Electoral Commission board must step down.
Hatutaki fujo. Hatutaki utani wala mihaka.
He says, we do not want violence or brinksmanship. We want the truth. We want justice, and that's why we're saying that the Electoral Commission chairman should start preparing to leave office early. The opposition has said the Electoral Commission favors Kenya's ruling Jubilee coalition. The government has so far refused to dissolve the commission. But President Uhuru Kenyatta invited CORD leaders for a meeting at State House Tuesday. Kenyatta further extended the olive branch by inviting the opposition to join government-led celebrations for Freedom Day in Nakuru. However, CORD decided to hold its own rally. Wednesday's peaceful demonstration was a sharp contrast to others in the past month where police have tear-gassed and beat protesters. Those in attendance say tensions may be thawing.
The president has to go a step further. It was just a meeting yesterday, but we expect him to do better than that, you know. Of course, he showed statesmanship, and that was a good beginning. The tension will go down if we continue in this way.
Odinga said if talks fail, the opposition will resume its weekly street protests Monday. Kenya is set to hold presidential and parliamentary elections in August of next year. Lenny Ruvaga for VOA News, Nairobi.
A European Union naval operation has destroyed more than 100 boats used by people smugglers in its first year of operation. The Associated Press quotes the German government as saying Operation Sophia has seized 85 rubber boats and 18 wooden boats. Also, nearly 70 people have been arrested in the operation since May of last year. In other migrant-related news, the European Commission, the executive wing of the EU, has allowed five countries to extend their border controls for another 6 months. The decision affects Denmark, Sweden, Germany, Austria, and France. Italy is the prime destination for migrants and refugees sailing across the Mediterranean from North Africa. The new arrivals are brought to centers first to be registered and then sheltered. But protests by young migrants have become common at the centers, many of which are in Sicily. Reporter Antonella Sferraza is following developments from Palermo. She spoke with VOA's Joe DiCapua about the protests.
On Monday, a group of migrants, all minors, protested in a reception center in the suburb of Palermo. They locked themselves into the structure, preventing the access of the people in charge of their care. But when the police arrived, they stopped immediately and explained the reason of their protest. They complained about the poor condition of the structure and about the poor living condition, denouncing the low quality of the food and the lack of other basic goods. They complain also because they say they have not still received an international phone card, so they cannot get in touch with their parents. And they have not received the daily pay they are entitled to receive. For every minor, the Italian government pay 45 euros per day. Obviously, only a small part goes in their hands. The rest is for the structure.
Antonella, tell us about these centers. What are they like? Can you describe them?
Yes, there are different kind of reception center in Italy. The reception system is distinguished between first reception and second reception. First reception includes the Center for First Assistance, the Centers for Accommodation of Asylum Seekers, and the Center for Identification and Expulsion. This is usually a very big structure where thousands of migrants are hosted while they are waiting to know about their future. But then, beside, there is a second-line reception system that is provided under the so-called System for Protection of Asylum Seekers and Refugees. This is a program, a public-funded network of local authorities and a different organization which accommodates asylum seekers and people in need of international protection. It is formed by small reception structures. So in contrast to the large-scale building provided in first reception, this network is composed of over 500 smaller-scale decentralized projects. The structure mainly consists of flats and small reception centers and community homes. In the case of Palermo, we are talking about a secondary reception center. So it is a little house in very poor condition. The people in charge say that this structure was supposed to be open in July, but then the recent migrant influx forced them to accommodate 54 minors. They also say that they are doing everything they can in order to make them feel comfortable and that they haven't still received the government funds. They denied the minors' claims, saying also that they are very sad by the protest. It's not the first time that migrants protest. Last week in Fondachelli, a little town close to Messina, a furious protest of minors has been recorded. They destroyed the reception center furnishings.
So did the young migrants, the minors, describe how they felt about being in these centers?
The reason of the protest, in the majority of cases, is that they feel prisoners, as all the procedures for their legalization take too long. So often they are exasperated. There are also protests to the fact that some migrants know that they will be rejected. And there are obviously cases of hotheads, but in general, the protests are due to the exasperation of the people who stay there with all the pressure put on Italy in coping with the arrivals. It is obvious all the structures are needed, even if they are not perfect.
That's reporter Antonella Sferraza from Palermo. She spoke with VOA's Joe DiCapua. A medical aid group says 1,000 Burundians each week continue to flee unrest and cross the border into Tanzania. Doctors Without Borders says there are now about 140,000 Burundi refugees in Tanzania. It says they are living in three overcrowded and ever-expanding camps. The group, also known as MSF, warns all the camps are expected to exceed their capacity by September. In all, about 260,000 people have fled Burundi. Besides Tanzania, they have gone to Rwanda, Uganda, and the DRC. The exodus was triggered by violence following the announcement by President Pierre Nkurunziza in April of last year that he would seek a third term. The opposition called it unconstitutional. Many opposition leaders are now in exile. Hundreds have died in the ongoing violence. Egyptian aviation officials say a French ship has picked up signals likely emitted from the black boxes of an Egypt airplane that crashed in the Mediterranean last month. The May 19th crash killed all 66 people on board. The data recorders could help determine what caused the plane to go down on its flight from Paris to Cairo. Investigators say smoke was detected in the cabin minutes before the crash, but there was no indication what caused it. Robotic submarines are due to arrive in the area within a week to help retrieve the flight recorders once they are located. Well, Zimbabwe is experiencing its deepest financial crisis since 2008, when its economy collapsed and the country was forced to adopt the U.S. dollar and other currencies. Now, with a shrinking economy, there's a shortage of preferred U.S. dollars, forcing people to line up at banks every day to try and obtain cash to live on. The government has offered a plan to print $200 million U.S. bond notes, but people on the street do not believe this will happen and have said they would not accept the notes. Reporter Peter Thornycroft is following developments in Zimbabwe. She warns the economic situation there is getting worse with no long-term solution in sight.
It's becoming ever more desperate, as it was in 2008 when Zimbabwe ran out of its own currency. The Zimbabwe dollar had no value. Now Zimbabwe has run out of the currency it took on, the United States dollar. It's running out of the notes. The cash is very hard to find since April, but particularly in the last 10 days. People are queuing day in, day out, just to get a couple of $100. Earlier this week in Second City, Bulawayo, people were restricted to drawing $100 from their accounts. These were salaried people. In Harare, earlier this week, they were restricted to $300. Those are from the main banks that support the civil servants and the lower paid working class of Zimbabwe. Civil servants, for example, who may get $350 a month salary, will have to queue two or three times to withdraw their money.
How did it get to this point?
Zimbabwe imports double what it exports because the economy collapsed post-2000 after the land grab began when productive white-owned farms were taken away. So the agricultural economy collapsed and it's never recovered. Secondly, 82% of the government's income is spent on paying civil service salaries as the size of the government increased dramatically in the last 2 years. So the IMF says it will re-lend to Zimbabwe for the first time since 1999 if it pays off its debt.
Also, I understand that the government is going to be printing U.S. bond notes. What exactly are these? It looks like people are not going to want to use these.
People are extremely worried about the so-called bond notes. They are going to be printed in Germany, 200 million of them, in small denominations from $20 down. The governor of the Reserve Bank, John Magudia, says there will be too few of them to create any kind of subterranean market in bond notes. They will help the exporters. He said he is going to pay these bond notes as a 5% bonus to exporters to try and boost exports and reduce the gap between imports and exports. But people in the streets are extremely suspicious. They fear that this will be return of the Zimbabwe dollar, called a bond note. And many of them depend on U.S. dollars. They go to South Africa, they import goods, and they sell them on the streets. They are extremely anxious. Originally, the governor of the Reserve Bank said these notes would be introduced in June. Then last week, he said August. Today, he's delayed that now to October. Some are wondering if they will ever come to the streets of Zimbabwe because people have expressed such fierce opposition to the introduction. The problem is the U.S. dollars are running out. Zimbabwe already uses something called bond coins, which are small change, which are printed in South Africa, these coins. They have no value outside of Zimbabwe, but they're coins. They're just for change at supermarkets. The economy is in a very serious condition, and people are worried that the U.S. dollar notes are going to run out completely and that the economy will seize up completely.
What about the use of the South African rand? Would that help the situation?
It would help the situation considerably, as the rand is trading at a very good rate to the U.S. dollar, which is so strong. And the Reserve Bank says it wants to move the Zimbabwe economy to the South African rand, which would be resisted by some because the U.S. dollar is so valuable. But most economists believe this is the only chance they have of a rescue. It wouldn't last long, but it would help while they get onto their feet and are able to manage some kind of repayment of the IMF debt.
What do you see down the road in the months ahead in terms of finances?
They are going to restrict imports into Zimbabwe quite heavily. So we suspect to see shortages in the supermarkets. We expect to see some kind of restriction on imports of luxury items in particular. But there's no short-term solution to what is going on in Zimbabwe.
That's reporter Peter Thornycroft. She spoke with me from Johannesburg. The World Health Organization today declared the end of Ebola transmission in Guinea after the country successfully passed 42 days without a confirmed case of this fatal disease. Lisa Schlein reports from WHO headquarters in Geneva.
Guinea was first declared free of Ebola in December. Since then, it has had two flare-ups of the disease. This West African country now has passed two 21-day incubation periods without a single case of Ebola. So the World Health Organization is declaring Guinea free of Ebola transmission for a second time. WHO spokesman Christian Lindemeyer tells VOA what Guinea is experiencing is not unusual. He notes both Liberia and Sierra Leone also have had outbreaks of the disease since having been declared free of Ebola.
We should expect flare-ups. That is what has been said before and what we have seen in the past, pockets of flare-ups. But since the countries are prepared now, we're very confident that any flare-ups can be dealt with quickly and efficiently. But that's speculating far ahead. If all these 90 days pass by, then the transmission of Ebola virus could be declared over.
In the latest outbreak, seven confirmed and three probable cases of Ebola virus disease were reported between March 17th and April 6th. Guinea now enters a 90-day period of heightened surveillance to make sure any new cases are quickly identified before they can spread to other people. More than 11,000 people had died from Ebola in the three most heavily affected West African countries by the time WHO declared the transmission of the Ebola virus virtually over at the end of last year. More than 2,500 of these deaths occurred in Guinea. The World Health Organization says it expects Liberia will be declared Ebola-free at the end of its latest flare-up of the virus on June 9th. Since the virus is resident in animals, mainly bats, WHO says countries must remain vigilant and prepare to tackle periodic outbreaks of the disease. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
The leader of the Polisario independence movement in Western Sahara died yesterday. Mohamed Abdelaziz, who was in his 60s, died after a long illness. An official of the Polisario Front declared a 40-day period of mourning for its founder and named an interim leader. Morocco annexed the former Spanish colony in 1975. Abdelaziz took leadership of the liberation movement in 1976 with support from neighboring Algeria. And that wraps up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Please stay tuned to Straight Talk Africa with Shaka Solly coming up at 18:30 UTC. On behalf of our producer, Bill Workinger, and our engineer, Aiden Utko, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.
Hello, I am Shaka Solly. Join me on Straight Talk Africa every Wednesday as we discuss topics of special interest to Africans, including politics, economic development, press freedom, health, social issues, and conflict resolution. Take your pick. Watch on television, log on to the internet, or listen right here on the radio.
everyone is looking for something special when maybe they should just listen instead. The VOA's African Music Mix will soothe your nerves and calm your head. Tune in from 0 to 300 UTC and 1100 to 1300 hours UTC to make you feel good. So treat yourself to that something special.